Well, I mentioned before that in the Gospel of Luke, the story of Jesus' birth is told looking over Mary's shoulder, right? The angel Gabriel comes to her. It's all about what's happening to Mary at the time, and Joseph plays a fairly insignificant role. There are shepherds in that story, but in Matthew's gospel, the story is told looking over the shoulder of Joseph. There are no angels. Gabriel doesn't come to talk to Mary. Instead, Joseph has dreams that either reassure him to marry Mary or to warn him about things. While there are no shepherds in Matthew's version, there are these strange characters that we hear about today. They're magi. The word is magoi. It's the same word from which we get magician, okay? At the end of the service, we'll be singing a hymn called We Three Kings, and I love that hymn. But it's all wrong. The Bible says nothing about there being three of them. There are three gifts, but it does not number the magoi. It doesn't say how many magi come. Okay? Nowhere does it say that they are kings. They are foreigners. That's the most important thing. They're Gentiles. They do not belong to the religion of Jesus. They are scholars. Priests. We know they're astrologers because they study the stars and they follow one of them throughout the story, first to Jerusalem and then to Bethlehem. They're coming because somehow the Hebrew prophecies have fallen into their hands and they have read about this king of the Jews who is going to be born. They don't know much about him, they don't know where to find him. But they follow a star, and they go to the place that seems most logical. If you're looking for a new king of the Jews, why would you not go to the sitting king of the Jews? Which is exactly what they do. They go visit Herod. Now, Herod is king of the Jews not because the Jewish people want him to be. He is king of the Jews because the emperor wanted him to be, and he was in the emperor's favor. In fact, most of the Jewish population opposed Herod as king of the Jews. Many of them didn't even believe he was Jewish. His background was Idumean. But he found favor with the emperor. He was named king of the Jews. And so, reasonably, when they come looking for wisdom and power, where do they go? They go to the sitting king of the Jews. Big mistake. Because you see, Herod does not have a newborn child who will succeed him. And so when he hears about this new king of the Jews, he's terrified, and all Jerusalem with him, it says. Why? Because that's the power base. Those are the people who have the power, who live in the favor of the emperor, who get their power in part from Herod and their association with him. So he goes seeking wisdom to his scholars and says, where do the prophets say this king of the Jews is going to be born? Well, they're pretty clear about this. In Bethlehem of Judea. So the information is carried back to the Magi in Bethlehem of Judea. It's just down the road a piece. Okay? And Herod says, when you find this king of the Jews, you come and tell me. Because I want to come and pay him homage too. He's not the first politician to lie, I'm sure. He certainly hasn't been the last. But it's a bald-faced lie that he tells. He has no desire to worship or honor this child. We understand as we read the rest of the story, his desire is to do away with the child. Herod is so insecure as a leader that he is threatened by a child, by a toddler. He's frightened of a toddler. Now, some of you who have toddlers at home will understand this, right? But that's not why he's frightened of this toddler. He's frightened because this toddler is going to grow up, he thinks, and supplant him. What he doesn't realize is that the power he holds is not real power. The power he holds is given to him by another person who holds no real power, the emperor. The real power we discover in this story is in Bethlehem, in a house, and is somewhere between birth and 2 years old. And so the Magi go to Bethlehem, seeking the child, and they go to the house where the family lives. In Luke, of course, the family lives in Nazareth. There is a census. They come to Bethlehem for a period of time and then go back. In Matthew, they live in Bethlehem. They don't come to Nazareth until they go away to Egypt and then come back. Very different stories. So they go to this house in Bethlehem, and they find Joseph and Mary and the child, who is a toddler, most likely. And they open their treasure chests, and they offer him gifts. Gold? What happened to the gold? Well, my guess is the gold was used when they became political refugees and had to leave the country and go to Egypt to pay for their trip over, to pay for their time there, and to pay for their trip back when Herod eventually dies. Frankincense, the incense that was burned then, and the incense that is burned even today in some Christian traditions, symbolizes our prayers rising. The Psalms say our prayers rise like incense. The smoke from the incense was a way of visualizing how our prayers rise to God. Myrrh could have been a healing ointment, but was certainly used to anoint the dead. An intimation of what ultimately will happen to this child. What ultimately will happen to each of us? Sadly enough, what ultimately will happen to a number of children? Because you see, the Magi, when they open their treasure chest for the child, note, they don't open their treasure chest for Herod. They're not trying to curry favor with the political power center of their time. They don't open their treasure chest until they find this child. But they are warned in a dream that Herod's intentions are not good, and they are not to go back to him, but they are to return home by another route, and so they do. And Joseph and Mary and Jesus are warned. Joseph has a dream that Herod's intentions are not good for this child, and so they escape as refugees into Egypt and remain there until Herod has died. Herod is so frightened of this child that he orders the death of all children 2 years old and under. If you can imagine, someone who supposedly is in one of the most powerful positions in the world being that insecure and afraid of a child. The day we commemorate the deaths of those children is the feast day of Holy Innocents, December 28th. I mentioned before our daughter Sarah, our older daughter, was born on December 28th. On that day, those Holy Innocents took on a face for me. And ever since then, I have seen them in the face of every single child. All those children who come up here for children's time, every baby we baptize, every child, I see those Holy Innocents. And it reminds me that ultimately the wise men, we don't know that they were all men, do we? Magoi is just plural. It could have been men and women. But the Magi didn't find the wisdom and power they were looking for in Jerusalem, in the courts of Herod. They found the wisdom and the power they were looking for in a child. I wonder what it would be like if we began to truly value our children, to find in them wisdom and power and value that we will never find in those who hold power over us. Oh, we say we value our children. Look what we pay the people who take care of our money, and look what we pay the people who take care of our children, and that will tell you exactly how we value our children. But what if we did? What if we, like the Magi, sought our wisdom in the imagination and the truth of children? Got one more story for you. This is a Sarah story. I've asked her permission to tell it, and she's given that. When she and Lizzie were very young, Lizzie was just a baby, and Sarah was probably 3 or 4 years old. Margaret's mother became very ill, and so Margaret had to go to Columbia to stay with her. She ultimately went into a nursing home. And so while I was keeping the girls in the evening, our routine would be I would read to them, I'd put them to bed. And one of the things we read was a book that had come to us as a gift from one of our neighbors. It was a Bible story book, and in that Bible story book were some absolutely gorgeous illustrations. I think they were done in Czechoslovakia. I don't remember exactly. One of those illustrations had an image of Jesus who was looking out in a kind of ghostly visage. His face was visible, large, and you see his disciples, and it looks like he's breathing on them. Of course, Jesus did breathe on his disciples and say, "My peace I give to you." In giving his spirit to them, he breathed on them. And the girls, especially Sarah, seemed to be fascinated by this image. So one night, I don't know what possessed me, but one night I stopped reading and I asked Sarah, "What do you think God looks like? Think God looks like a man or a woman or a rock or the sky or what?" And she stopped for just a beat, just a moment, and then she said, "Daddy," like I was the dumbest guy in the world, like it was obvious. "God's a..." Kind of surprised me. Because, you know, in both the Jewish and the Christian tradition, God is a... The Hebrew word ruach for spirit also means wind, also means breath. The Greek word pneuma also means spirit, wind, and breath. Now, she didn't know Greek or Hebrew. How did she figure this out? So I asked, "What makes you think that?" She said, "Well, look," and she turned to that illustration of Jesus breathing on his disciples. She said, "See, Daddy, God's a..." How can you argue with that, right? Well, it wasn't long after that. I told Margaret these stories, and it wasn't long after that that we found ourselves in Columbia staying in Nanny's house. And Nanny was in the nursing home and very close to death. Margaret and I were trading out times with her. Margaret had stayed with her really throughout that whole week before. And so I just happened to be with her in the early morning hours when she died. So I came home before the girls awoke from their sleep, talked to Margaret about how we were going to talk to them about their grandmother dying. And Margaret, being far wiser than I am about these things, took it in hand. And she told the girls that because Nanny had died, they would be able to see her body at the funeral home, but that her had gone to be with God. Made perfect sense to them. They understood. And so they did. We went through the visitation and the funeral, and we stayed there a few more days. One of my jobs was to help the girls with their baths, so I was there next to the tub. They were both in the tub playing and getting bathed, and Margaret was standing in the doorway. And in the midst of the conversation, which was not about Nanny or her dying, Sarah simply piped up and said, "Well, Daddy was with Nanny when she died, right?" We said, "Yes, Daddy was with Nanny when she died." And then she said, "And she gave him her last..." And she had. I was literally leaning over her when she breathed her last breath, although I had not shared that with Sarah. In reading her the stories of Scripture and giving her those illustrations of those who had imagined those stories visually, Somehow we had given her a language with which to talk about her grandmother's death, but also with which to talk about that that resides in each of us, that Spirit of God that is in each of us. Sarah now teaches preschoolers, and so she gets to hear that wisdom all the time. And we all know not everything that young children say is fraught with wisdom. But occasionally, there is a glimmer of God's presence that comes through them, which I think is the exact same glimmer that those magi saw in the child Jesus in Bethlehem that day. And that if we truly put more of our energy into listening to children, to hearing their needs, to responding to those needs, and to hearing the wisdom they have to share, I believe we would be a better society. I believe we would be a better people. I believe we would be completely different than we are now. That a lot of the division we experience would disappear. That we would find healing in children, a healing that we desperately want but seem unable to grasp. When the Magi came looking for power and wisdom, they first went to the logical place, the King of the Jews. But then they were taken following the star to find real power and real wisdom in a child who is truly King of not only the Jews, but of all people. Thanks be to God.